This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Otapote, Dunedin, and I am joined by Mawera Karatai from Whakatane.
Kia ora, Sam.
How's it going in Whakatane today?
Everything is good here in Whakatane. The sun is shining, the birds are singing.
How's your garden growing?
It's going well. Tomatoes and flowers already on the tomatoes. Asparagus is finished and I've got lots of little zucchinis coming. So I don't know what can be better than that.
You've got asparagus growing in drain pipes or something?
No, I've got my asparagus is growing underneath my grapevine right next to the chook house. So it gets a really good feed just by its position. So, and I'm the only person in our family of two who eats asparagus, so
do you have to protect the other chooks? Aren't free range, are they?
They go out in the garden every day, but they can't get to my asparagus.
Okay, because presumably they just eat the young shoots off.
Exactly, and then they would have to end up in the pot.
Green
That's
chicken.
Fair, I think.
And who are we introducing today?
It is my great pleasure to introduce one of the University of Otago Masters of Business students, Haikal Muhammad. Haikal, thank you for joining us today. It is a pleasure to have you with us today.
The pleasure is mine, Mawera and Sam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. Haikal, where did you grow up?
The short answer is all over the place, but mostly in Indonesia, in the island of Java, the most populous island in Indonesia. It's in the western part, either the suburbs of Jakarta or Bandung, in the capital of West Java.
What was that like?
It's two very different places. The suburbs of Jakarta is an American hellish cul-de-sac neighborhood, but it's actually kind of fun because I get to play outside with my friends, play soccer in the streets, whereas Bandung is this nice mountainous city where I could walk around with my parents enjoying the morning breeze. But yeah, I think it could be very different from what you think Indonesia would be like, because I would assume you think about Bali, but yeah, this is a mountainous city and a cul-de-sac-esque neighborhood.
What does the city do? What's its reason for being there?
That's interesting. The place I was born in, Bandung City, it's actually a city that colonial Dutch used to utilize for like retirement homes. So it's more like villas, things like that. I don't even know exactly what economy supports it. But I know currently the satellite cities around it is primarily funded by military bases, so perhaps government. And Jakarta, being the capital, we basically tax out every income from every part of Indonesia. And it is by far the richest part of Indonesia. We even have special allocation for other regions, but Jakarta is still the wealthiest. I think it's just because it's the capital and the central economic zone. It's basically a melting pot of everything that happens in Indonesia, is what I would say.
Now, I've just looked it up, and I am embarrassed. I'm pretty good on world geography, but I am embarrassed to say I could not put Bandung on a map. It's got 11 million people.
Yep, but actually, officially, we only have like half of that. The rest of the residents are people who come there to study, like I did after I moved to Jakarta. I moved back to Bandung to study urban planning, and yeah, I will not blame you for not knowing, because it's rather a low-key place, but you should visit someday.
It does look like it's in some nice mountains, volcanic mountains.
Uh-huh.
So, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Originally, from a young age, I knew I wanted to be an architect. I could attribute it mostly to this sitcom I watched growing up, How I Met Your Mother, where Ted Mosby, portrayed by Josh Radnor, is an architect, and it kind of romanticized in my developing frontal lobe. And I ended up doing urban planning instead for my undergraduates. And right now, I'm a consultant, mostly on urban planning digital tools. And yeah, so I ended up having something to do with buildings and cities, but not exactly drawing them.
Awesome. What was it that attracted you to urban planning?
Actually, I did not choose urban planning. Urban planning chose me in a literal sense. I did not do well. So the system in my university, it's not even in an Indonesia thing. It's an Institut Teknologi Bandung thing. After getting into the faculty, we must compete with each other to enter the major we want. And in my faculty, there are only two majors, architecture and urban planning. And I did not do well in my first year. It was hard being away from home. I was dealing with some mental stuff and relationship strain. And so basically, the university put me in urban planning because I did not make it to architecture, which is a blessing in disguise. Because I actually fell in love with urban planning and digital tools and whatnot.
Cool. We might come back to all of that. But that's not what you're doing now, or you're adding business sense to that?
My previous job, I actually entered as an urban data analyst, but I ended up doing a lot of the strategic and commercial aspect of the business because it's a startup. There's only 10 of us. And yeah, I pitched a lot to clients. I co-created solutions with governments, and I figured that I might need to learn more about business in order to be able to share what I do with more clients, because it's not that we don't have advanced enough tools. It's just we don't know how to capture the value from these tools and administer it to many people. That's why I'm studying business, so that I can learn more about making and selling this thing we love to build.
And what attracted you to studying in Dunedin?
I did not act. The first thing I did was look up universities that have entrepreneurship studies, because I am sponsored by Indonesian government for entrepreneurship studies. And Dunedin came into my radar when I met with Sarah in an education fair. And we talked a lot, and Sarah brought a lot of things about sustainability and how University of Otago has a lot of sustainability aspects to its studies, and it actually opened my eyes to it, because previously I was thinking for a more tech-based school because it's what I sell, tech-based tools. But I realized that tech is just a medium, it's just a way to do it, and I will always be working with developers, experts in that field. But I actually realized that sustainability and social equitability values is very important. Doing business for good is very important to what I do, and I decided that University of Otago, from the resources I've read, is a place to learn it more so than other candidates. It's the most prominent one, I would say.
Let's take the first of your music choices. I had to look up how to pronounce it. It is actually pronounced Soul Child. It doesn't look like it, but She Likes Spring. I prefer winter. Why this one?
And just a nod to the pronunciation. Yeah, I don't even know how to pronounce it too. I always make fun of it. But it's a song that I listen to with my then partner, now wife. She's here with me right now. We usually listen to it in a car, not because I like to ride cars. It's just because Indonesia is a car-centric country. But yeah, it reminds me of how far we've come together and how we're actually very different people and how we made it work. She's a qualitative kind of girl and I'm a quantitative kind of guy. And yeah, things like that. But every time I listen to it, I remember how we were just like college seniors who have nothing. And right now we're in New Zealand. I'm learning to chase my dreams, and she's here with me also exploring New Zealand together. And yeah, it just makes me smile. That's the reason.
Dog, if it looks like you're telling me I'm faded. It's cold outside, but spring's in a corner and I'm waiting. On the way to work, she saw the flowers blooming up, telling me how winter sucks for you. What more that I can do? No, we met this year, this season. That's why summer and fall for me. So hard where we'd be, and that's enough for me right now. What you've been dying to see, but you'll be the flower for me. I prefer marigold, but it's the lily from the valley that you want. What you've been dying to see, but you'll be the flower for me. I prefer marigold, but it's the lily from the valley. To me, as long as you're here.
to me. As long as you're here, I can keep you warm till spring comes. Yeah.
Hi, Cole. I think that would make a hit song. She's a qualitative kind of girl and I'm a quantitative kind of guy. Somebody should write that song. Academics everywhere would sing
to the song of the toothbrushes.
Yeah. Hi, Cole. Everybody has got somebody that they can look back in their lives to and say, that was where it all started for me. Who are the people who have inspired you?
That's really, it's actually hard to answer that, but if I could answer in a flash, it would be my father, because, I tried thinking like really, really big public figure, but it really is just my father who inspired me. He grew up with hardship. His father died when he was little and his mother had to support a family of, six. On an elementary school teacher salary. He had to move, follow his older siblings all over the place just to make ends meet and do ironing stuff and put work. But he always told me that just never give up and do your best and just believe in the process. And I think that he's the living proof of that, because he's from East Java, a small village in East Java, and he just retired a few days ago actually, but he actually was a very big IT hotshot in an oil company based in Indonesia, and I'm very proud of him for that, not because of what he ended up being, but for the obstacles he had to go through to be there. So every time I face a hurdle, I just remember that my dad probably has faced something harder, and I should believe in him when he said that to do my best and never give up.
Bubble sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets, and forest and beaches of Otago Peninsula, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nangu ki araha mai ki a koutou ko tahua hau. I hope you're all having the same beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, excuse me, ooh, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art. Perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know for us all the last several years have been very up and down, but I hope for you very revolutionary. We're starting to rethink the way we work, the way we do BC feel, and I'm about to launch into a big science project for the next millennia, so I'm excited too. And you have to excuse me yawning at you. It's not personal to you. It's very early in the morning where I am. So I'm thinking of you all, and of course a big, huge mihi nunui to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. It's a great honour and pleasure and privilege to be part of this show for the last several years, and, you know, I'm really launching into big science now, so it's wonderful to be part of a macrocosm of the microcosm and a macrobiome of the microbiome, clearly. So I am going into microbiome science world, which I'm very excited about, and it suits me down to the ground and beyond, because I've been blithering on to all of you about it for many, many years, and you've been very kind to me. And I'm now in a phase of my life where I'm able to consolidate all this blithering into something that I hope can be more helpful. And I will, of course, just like the microbiome, be working with lots and lots of other sensory life forms to put together initially a follow-on proposal, which I have to get ready by February. So I'm having all these insights as a long-standing lover of the living world, and even before standing lover of the living world, and now as part of my toadity too, and, you know, physical maturation process, I'm able to see how I can help Papa Tuanuku and indeed the infinite universe a bit more, which was great. And I was raised by a very academic, very loving, a single mum, and we travelled around the world. And, you know, sometimes she would get grumpy with me, and I didn't really understand why until now, because I've got all these wonderful, very enticing and exciting ideas that are growing and percolating in my head. And until I figured out how to structure my time in the best way, I've been getting internally mildly grumpy with the other life forms around me, which is very unusual for me and not a feeling that I feel proud of. So it's been really illuminating process. So I hope that for you, you're having similar personal elevations and ascensions and shifts and changes in your creative life. I've moved out to the garden now. There's some little tall horse and little silver eye flying around. There's some bones here. Someone's decided to place there as a wee offering, which is very kind. There's some slate with some volcanic ash in it. So we really are in paradise, and of course part of being in paradise is drawing upon our intestinal fortitude and other skills and gifts to give back and say thanks. So we're really talking about what I've been blithering on about, which is that 50-50 exchange, and I'm setting out to prove it with science. So it's a great day for me, and I hope for you. But thank you for being here, microbiome and all, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. And I'm heading around the corner, but it's getting very windy, so I'm going to head back the other way. And again, huge thank you to Sam and to our beautiful broadcasting technologies and all the great minds and hearts that allowed these things to come into being. I'm eternally grateful. I'm sending you all lots of love and friend encouragement. Thank you for your friendspiration, and I'll talk with you again soon. Ka kite!
Hi, Cole. What you guys have been doing with your podcast interviews has been amazing for me, and I'm really excited that we get to share yours. Can you tell us who you interviewed and why did you choose them?
So I interviewed Satrio Dwi Prakoso, an Indonesian national like me, who is a sustainability and green building professional, who is the head of Indonesian Society of Sustainable Professionals, and the founder CEO of Sustainhouse, a practice specializing in sustainable building designs. I interviewed him because I'm really interested at what he do, where he bridge policy and create designs and the implementation of green buildings directly. And it kind of reminded me of my childhood dreams of becoming an architect. I'm really glad I have this podcast as an excuse to interview him and get to know what he does a little bit more.
Have you ever noticed how conversation about sustainability always points out to solar, wind, or hydro? We celebrate producing more energy, but what if the real challenge is using less? Asking people to give up comfort is easier said than done. The real opportunity might be in adapting the spaces where we already spend our time in, by making them comfortable, but far less consuming. That's where green buildings come in. Smarter design and retrofits that cut energy, water, and emissions without making life that much harder. Of course, claims need proof. Certifications like LEED in the USA or Green Start in ANZ or EDGE perhaps promises to turn sustainability from marketing into measurable standards. But some studies show that the results don't always live up to the label. So today, we're answering the question, how much do these certifications really matter for businesses and for the planet? I'm Haikal. Welcome to today's episode of the podcast. And to explore the question, I spoke with an expert, Satrio Dwi Prakoso. Satrio is the head of Indonesian Society of Sustainability Professionals and director of Sustainhouse, a sustainability consulting firm based in Jakarta. He's an accredited professional in green building and sustainability, and he's worked across certifications like LEED, EDGE, WELL, and GreenShip, as well as ESG programs and net zero strategies for organizations, MDBs like World Bank, that's actually where we meet, but that's a story for another day, and governments across Asia. Mas Satrio, thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to have this discussion with you. Thank you for having me.
To warm us up, appetizer questions. So can you tell us, where is your happy place?
Interesting questions. So I have two happy places. The first one is my house, where I spend my time with my family. The second one is my own office, because the Sustainable office has been built with blood and tears.
Thanks for sharing that. That's actually a really good answer. So how did you get to where you are today from that point?
So I started my career as professional in several sectors. Then after maybe eight years of my professional experience, I decided to build my own company, starting as a side hustle. And then it grew quite fast. We started with hiring several employees, and then it came to a moment where I need to decide whether I want to be a professional or a full-time entrepreneur. And then back then in late 2022, I decided to become full entrepreneur to make at least my impact lah to the sustainable real estate implementation Indonesia.
So some people here, including me perhaps, might not be as familiar to the topic we are talking about today. So what are exactly are green building certifications? Why do they matter? And which systems are most common in our regions?
Yep, so basically, green building certification is a rating tool, consists of several related aspects, for example, location and transportation, energy, water, materials, indoor environmental quality, for example. Those are the aspects that are being assessed in the green building certification. And the unique thing is typically will be assessed by the accredited third party, meaning that you are not self-claiming or, you know, greenwashing, because I sometimes see a lot of people saying it's a green building. Yes, maybe it is in terms of the architectural plan, yes, but green building is quite holistic. We need to see not only one aspect, but from the multiple angles. That's why it's quite important. Its purpose basically to enforce the implementation of sustainability, especially in the built environment, as well as, you know, there are a lot of proposals actually, but I can refer to the net zero target by the World Green Building Council. So basically this green building certification is also a tool to achieve this net zero target. And then the main systems used globally, there are several certification available. I would say the LEED certification from the USGBC is the most common used globally. And then Green Star, of course, in Australia and New Zealand, BREEAM from UK. And then typically each of country has their own local green building certification, because some of the local contents is incorporated. Therefore, it reflects the needs of the green building aspects in the respective countries.
And I was wondering, how do
green building actually translate into real world value, perhaps?
There are a couple or several things. The first one is, based on the research, it shows that the building with green certification has higher value or valuation. For example, it has 5 to 8% increase in terms of, let's say, the building valuation when it is sold to the other parties, or let's say it can be rented at the premium price compared to the normal one. So that's the one of the benefits. The second one is maybe not directly to the economic aspect, but basically it's a requirement, a mandatory requirement from the key stakeholders. In this case, is the investor, and the second one is the tenant itself. I'll give you a brief explanation. The first one, I heard a lot of investors, they don't want to invest in, you know, this nowadays, but for the real estate, they also require the developers or asset managers already completed the certification. Otherwise, they don't want to invest. The second one, the tenants itself, when they contact the building managers, they are intended to rent the space. The green list certification is also the mandatory requirement for them. So it's driving the market. Therefore, these building managers maybe don't really care about the certification itself, but because it is mandatory, then they have to do it.
I feel like the arguments for green building is very compelling. But of course, in practice, it might not always be simple. So I was wondering, from your experience, what are the challenges or barriers that make people want to make green building or in green building certifications?
The first one is maybe the incorrect mental models. So, meaning that sometimes a lot of people think that being green is very expensive. What I can say is maybe it is expensive at the beginning, but when we are talking about long-term value, it provides a lot of benefits. So we need to see it in the longer term. That's one of the biggest challenges, the capex to become green. The second one is the capacity. The knowledge sometimes, okay, they are willing to go green, but they don't know how to do it. That's why typically they will find the consultants or external parties to help them in order to achieve it. But for the bigger corporations, mostly they have their in-house team to support them.
People like to say that certifications don't always reflect actual performance, and some even might worry that they can become some sort of greenwashing. How do you see certifications helping businesses build trust and avoid that risk?
This is interesting, a very unique question. From my point of view of supporting our clients to achieve the green certification for more than 40 projects, I can assure you that the process takes efforts, takes time. So in order to become greenwashing, maybe if we are being honest about the process itself, I don't think it's a greenwashing. But sometimes what I see is people who don't understand the certification itself, it speaks more than the certification. For example, the certification only covers three aspects, and then people who don't understand or misunderstand the one certification into the other, sometimes it becomes talking about 5 to 6 points, which is not covered in this simple certification called EDGE, I see the gap is there sometimes, meaning that if only three aspects are being considered, then we need to be true that this is these three have been completed, not the more than the two.
I was wondering, do you think the certifications are evolving fast enough to keep up with greenwashing criticisms?
The Green Building Council that produces the certification, they always evolve the standard itself. Every maybe 3 to 5 years, they will launch a new standard that is more stringent, that is more relevant to what the position of the industry is. For example, LEED launched LEED version 5 earlier this year after collecting a lot of feedback from stakeholders from around the world, meaning that they were trying to hear these critics' feedbacks and so on and incorporate into the product that can move the needle to achieve the global goals. So I think, especially for the big ones, yeah, the certification can always keep up that too, with the market needs. Yeah.
Where do you think certifications are going next, especially now with the existence of digital tools like smart meters, sensors, and digital twins? Do you see the role of certifications changing?
The goals stay the same, but the way to do it, maybe it is still evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And the aspects incorporated, it's also changing because the needs are changing too.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, I think the embodied carbon in materials mm-hmm. is one of the key element that should be addressed in all of the green certification, because sometimes, for example, in Indonesia, the green certification does not really touch it because the information is not available in the market. That's also the challenge. While what I saw from the Green Mark certification in Singapore, they already assess the carbon, because carbon from the materials, I mean, meaning that the tools to track the usage of the materials becoming more and more important. For example, LCA life cycle. One click LCA is one of the product that is very powerful and popular. Yeah, I think that's the one. I cannot remember the other one, because when you are talking about the digital tool BIM, sometimes in Indonesia it's not really implemented on the ground.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not because they cannot do it, but not everyone can do it.
Yeah, that's right.
The project team, the design team, the construction team will not be able to operate it. Then it becomes a hassle for everyone in order to, you know, keep up with that. So if you want to use BIM, meaning the whole ecosystem need to understand it. And honestly speaking, that's not the case in Indonesia.
I see. And I was wondering, after doing all these things, all these great things, has your views on sustainability changed from the way it was in the beginning?
No, I think the journey is still long, both in the real estate sector and for the other sectors. In Indonesia, you know, the government already launched the new certification, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's called Bangunan Gedung Hijau back then in 2021-2022, meaning that the implementation is already running on the ground. So we need to keep pushing it. And then for the other remedial certification as well, we see a lot of, not a lot of it, at least a growth there, yeah, in the market needs. So it's still there. What we need to ensure is the greenwashing is not being on the ground. Sometimes what I see, a lot of stories about the successful projects is being exaggerated.
Mm.
That's what we need to prevent. We need to, as you mentioned earlier, needs to be supported by the data, and the story is following that, not, you know, becoming bigger than what it is on the ground. Yeah.
I see. That's really interesting.
Yeah. All right. One more before we close this out. What is one simple thing that people could do to live more sustainably? From you?
Please use the public transport, ensuring that the building is efficient. Therefore, you can also contribute to the, you know, reducing the energy as well as the carbon footprint coming from the building energy usage. Third one is the water, using the efficient water fixtures, segregate the waste, organic, inorganic, the hazardous. Yep.
I see. All right. That is all. We are all out. Thank you again, Mas Satrio from Sustain a House. That was a really valuable perspective. With that in mind, let's step back and look at what the research and business press say about where certifications are headed.
From Satrio's insight, it's clear that certifications aren't just about being green. They promote lower operational cost, stronger customer branding, and future-proofing against regulatory requirements. Certified buildings also command higher valuations and premium rents. Why? Because investors increasingly require certification to meet their own sustainability goals, and tenants, especially the big corporations, demand it too. So, while certifications aren't perfect, they've become one of the clearest ways for businesses to gain trust, stay competitive, and prepare for a low-carbon future. Thanks for tuning in, and remember, the buildings of tomorrow won't just stand tall, they will stand certified.
That was absolutely outstanding, really lovely work. Can you tell us what was your biggest takeaway from the interview?
One thing that stood out to me that I did not know previously is when he mentioned that in the future, we could go into the direction of sustainable building materials that get put into the system. Because thus far, I've only thought about the consumption of energy and water, but it's also true that materials also factor in a lot of the carbon footprint that green building has. So yeah, doing it well from the get-go, from the construction of the building, is the future, and perhaps like the auditing and the accreditating of those materials could also be interesting. I'm definitely going to think that in the future when I contribute myself and apply myself in the world of urban planning.
That's so good. And if I think of now, when we think about what does the future look like for you, if I could magic you 10 years into the future from now, what are you doing?
That's a really good question. I would like to think that I'm contributing in some sort of big non-government organization, such as the World Bank or Asian Development Bank, because I've worked with them a couple of times as an outside counsel, and they do heaven's work. They help densification, creating more building houses literally in Indonesia and in Mongolia, and they build it not just some random housing, but actual livable and green housing. And I want to be able to contribute in that bodies while also having the business acumen that I learned from University of Otago to make those kind of projects impactful and financially feasible. That's what I aspire to do in the future.
I'm heartened by hearing that other countries in the world are taking green building seriously. Will we see a bigger commitment to that, do you think, going forward? Or, you know, because I just worry about the whole greenwashing thing, but it sounds to me like you're telling me that there is a real focus and a purposeful approach.
I think in the future, it definitely, there is a definite shift towards that, but maybe not for the reasons we think. Maybe not because of the goodness of the investors, but rather because of societal pressure and expectation. Social licenses to operate, if I could say. Yeah, because the demand for green building is increasing because there is a target for big corporations to have offices in green buildings, things like that. And because of that, people are more incentivized to build green buildings. And even though that may not be the most ideal reason to do it, but I think if it creates an overall positive impact to the world, we consume less due to green buildings because of the pressure we give, then that's a good enough reason for me to have a shift towards that.
I need to squeeze in another song. Your second song, Hoosier, Cherry Wine. Why this one?
This is perhaps unlike the previous song, which is all nice and good, while Cherry Wine has a gentle sound. It actually has a narrative about being in an abusive relationship told from a victim's perspective. And it actually, the actor of the music video also actually won an award for it. And I think I want people to know this song because I want them to be aware that even though you might be feeling really nice and lovey-dovey in a relationship, please be aware of domestic abuses and keep a lookout for your closest people and see sign of domestic abuses because it's a life and death thing. And the more people are aware, we can save more people from it.
Merciful, I'm all but washed in the time. tired of her breathing, and it's worth it, it's divine. I have this some of the time, the way she shows me I'm hers and she's
mine. Michael, I have some questions to end the show. What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Yeah, one of the proudest achievements I've had in the past couple of years would be I got the opportunity to share my work with the Indonesian Association of Professionals in a national assembly with some other prominent figures, where I got to share how in CityPlan we use natural language processing from Twitter data, or currently X, to analyze the sentiment people have towards certain public services, such as road networks or water networks or other things that is within the government's responsibility. That way, with limited resources, we can kind of figure out what people really pay attention to and complain most about, so that we can hands-on tackle the issue directly and understand the sentiments towards it. And yeah, I feel really proud of that achievement, because it was a really hard thing to do, because I'm not a technical person, but I'm glad that the people from all over Indonesia get to see it and looks very interested about it.
What's your superpower?
My superpower would be I make great educational workshops, especially on technical tools. And the reason being is because I myself is not from a technical background, so I understand when these government officials have troubles, why they have troubles, and I can make it fun for them when they're learning things like Python or RStudio. Yeah, I can make it fun for them, even if they are the oldest government official, you know. Yeah.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Well, my advice would be always be curious. And if you can think it and you know the questions you want to ask, I believe that you've got what it takes to find out the answer. It will ultimately uncover more questions, but if you keep doing that, one day you're going to be the best at something and you're going to be contributing a whole lot of things to the world.
Great advice.
Thank you.
Mawira.
Michael, it has been an absolute joy having you in our class this semester, getting to know a little bit about you, seeing your beautiful work, and then tying it all up with this interview today and listening to your podcast. Thank you very much for the contribution that you have made to our education community at the University of Otago. I'm really glad that you chose to come here. And whatever you do going into the future, I know that you're going to take this beautiful smiling heart of yours and make the world a better place. So all the best for your future. Kia ora.
Thank you so much, Mawira and Sam, for having me here. It's such a pleasure. It's a one-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I'll keep doing what I do. And thank you so much for your support, because without you, I will not be moving this quick. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. Now, we're recording this on Mawira's birthday, so we're going out to Katy Perry, Birthday.
I hope you got a healthy attitude.
to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on 08r.org.nz. We're brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, who are brought to you by Otago Polytechnic and the University of Otago. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We were joined today by Haikal Muhammad, who brought his conversation with Satrio Duoprasco. I hope I said that right. From Sustainer House in Indonesia. With birthday girl Mawira Karatai, I'm Samuel Mann. For that with Blowing Bubbles, we hope you enjoyed the show. Mati wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.